Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. I think you're going to really enjoy our story today. It's written by Michael Natale. We have run two other stories by Michael. Those are Firstborn and The Rut, both of which were fun stories. In fact, Firstborn was the first story that we did that used a cast of multiple voices. It was a big step in a new direction for Variant Frequencies. For this story, we are back to one voice. But this is not just any voice. The narrator for our story is Michael A. Stackpole. Michael A. Stackpole is a science fiction and fantasy novelist who also podcasts. He is the co-host of The Dragon Page, Cover to Cover. To learn more about him, his work, and to read free serialized fiction, visit his website at www.stormwolf.com. When I first read the story, I instantly thought that we needed a great voice for it. I think you will agree. Michael A. Stackpole has a great voice. Also, if any of you are going to be near Romulus, Michigan between May 1st and 3rd, come see me at PenguinCon 7. PenguinCon is a science fiction and open source software convention. I will be in panels with Steve Ely from Escape Pod and with Will Wheaton of Star Trek fame. I had fun at PenguinCon last year, and I hope to see some of you there as well. Now, on to our story. Under the Bed by Michael Natale. Bad dreams, shadows on the wall, things that go bump in the night. Something lurks in the darkness to whisper things no child should hear. To remind young minds of things no child should remember, and to feed. It waits, hungry, but patient, in the blackness, under the bed.
In the darkness under the bed, you find many discarded things. The odd sock, underwear, forgotten toys, dust and cobwebs, small scurrying insects that feed on crumbs that find their way down the crack between the mattress and wall, and me. I cling to the underside of the box spring, waiting. I hang like this for a very long time, until the child whose bed I am under has grown up enough to hear me whisper. It's dreadfully dull, but I am a very patient creature. When the house is empty, I like to crawl out from under the bed and torment the family pets. Does your cat hiss at empty rooms? Does your dog bark at the door left slightly ajar? I'm probably standing in the shadows making faces at them. If there are no pets, I find a dark place and loiter there, in the off chance someone walks by. The basement is the best for this. There's something about basements that everyone fears, whether they're conscious of it or not. All I need to do is stare at you from the shadows. You can feel my eyes. I know you can. The hairs on your neck stand up, and I drink the familiar tingle of unease that makes you turn your head and look around. No matter which way you turn, it does no good. I am always right behind you. Grown-ups can't truly see creatures like me. That feeling you get when I stare at you from the shadows is just an echo. A leftover from when you were a child, and something under your bed whispered nightmares in your ear while you slept. How I miss that. It has been a long time since anyone lived here. The house sat empty for the longest time after the Fowler family finally moved out, and who could blame them? The pressure from all their neighbors finally got to them about what the boy did. I lived under Kyle Fowler's bed for 10 years. I'd whisper to Kyle as he fell asleep each night. I would tell him things no child should hear. things no child should try to remember. It's best to do this as they are just falling asleep, while their minds are still in the limbo between the waking and dreaming worlds. Kyle was different, though. Special. Even at 4 years old, Kyle's nightmares were unusually intense. They were full of disturbing thoughts and images I must admit had nothing to do with me. The gloomy, shadow-filled alleyways of Kyle's mind provided me with a potent stream of terror-filled nights to feed upon. For a time, anyway. Though Kyle's night terrors gave me the most satisfying and pleasurable meals I've ever experienced, the specter of his waning youth hung over us. It was an ever-present reminder to me that with each passing day, Kyle grew older. One day he wouldn't be able to hear my whispers at all. I knew enough to savor the good times while I could. One afternoon, the ice cream man visited Robin Road, and Kyle's mother took his younger sister Grace out to get a popsicle. While they were outside, Kyle strangled her kitten muffins in his room and stuffed the dead kitten in a shoebox. He shoved the box into a garbage bag and stuffed the entire thing under the bed. That night, Kyle fell asleep almost instantly. I tried to mimic the sound of the strangled cat meowing and scratching from inside the shoebox, but he slept too soundly to hear. I went hungry that night. The next morning, Kyle woke up early and stuck a hand under the bed, groping unsuccessfully for the box. He dropped to all fours and a blonde head peered under the bed. His hand shot out and grabbed the bag containing Muffin's remains. He hesitated a moment. Kyle was looking right at me. I knew he couldn't really see me, not strictly speaking, but I knew then that he sensed me. A smirk twisted one corner of his thin lips as he quickly took out the box. He tore the lid off and then fell utterly still. He spent a long time just looking at the contents of that box. He wasn't excited, I'd have felt that. He wasn't afraid either, as my growling stomach reminded me. Kyle stood and put on his slippers and robe. He put the lid back on the shoebox and stuffed it back in the trash bag and left the room with it. The next day, I overheard Kyle's parents arguing about which of them had left the door open. Each accused the other while Grace wailed in sorrow at the loss of her cat. Kyle simply went about his routine as if nothing happened. He played his video games, arranged battles on his bedroom floor between superhero action figures, and watched lots of TV. That was the beginning of the end. It was a hot July afternoon when they found them in the basement. Kyle was just standing as if in shock, a bloody claw hammer in his hand. Grace's tiny, mutilated body was stuffed into the small place behind the boiler. The Fowlers brought Kyle to therapy sessions and told desperate lies to one another that it had all been some sort of an accident. I did warn you that grown-ups are unable to see monsters. This is even truer for parents and their children. But I recognized one of my own kind. Kyle was already too much a monster for me to teach him anything. When he was 15, he killed a neighborhood girl half his age. His own mother caught him in the act in the garage. Kyle went to prison, and his parents moved out the following month. Right before they packed up Kyle's room, I crept out from under the bed and returned to the basement. The spot where little Grace had been murdered still thrummed with a tasty residue of energy, always found at the scene of a violent death. I circled around the spot, trying to feel where the imprint of Grace's terror resonated most. I curled up there, settling in for the long wait. 9 years passed while I hide in the basement of an empty house. Now I'm happily under a bed again, and the child is called Josh Brennan. Josh is 7, loves monster movies and comic books, and is deathly afraid of spiders. Each night when he goes to sleep, I whisper to him. I suggest that tiny spiders are crawling over his eyelids, making their way into his scalp, where they will lay eggs under his skin. Sometimes I'll pull myself out from under the bed and breathe across his skin ever so softly. To his sleeping mind, it feels like the tiny feet of hundreds of little spiders. This always draws him out of a deep sleep just enough for me to whisper some more to him. doesn't take long before he's fully awake, crying for his parents. His panic is delicious, so palpable that his first few calls for help are small and strangled. His parents cannot hear these quiet, desperate cries, and he knows it. Once his terror mounts, he'll scream for them. They will finally come running. By then, I am satiated like a bloated little tick clinging beneath his bed. A year goes by, and Josh's new fear is the monsters he sees on the creature double feature every Saturday. Dracula, Wolfman, Boris Karloff. These are pale shadows of what's really out there, but I work with what I have. There is no nightlight in Josh's bedroom. His father won't allow it. Josh draws the curtains open a bit each night after his parents tuck him in. This lets in a broad swath of moonlight that bathes the room in silvery shadows. I can feel his fear begin to awaken as he stares into his open closet, unable to close his eyes and try to fall asleep. The way one of his coats is hanging, it looks like Bela Lugosi wrapped in his Dracula cape. Josh wants to get up, dash over, and slam the closet door shut. He's too frightened. I shape the shadow a little bit to help the illusion, but I can't take credit for all of it. Too many monster movies, I chuckle to myself. It's almost too easy. His heart is pounding, and with each beat, I feel new energy pulse through me. Blinding, irrational fear, all for me. I drink it in. Suddenly, a light clicks on, and the flow is cut off abruptly. I'm disappointed. Josh has gotten out of bed enough to reach for the lamp on the dresser a few feet away. He's never done that before. Now he can see the coat for what it is, and he gets up and shuts the closet door. With another sad click, the light goes out. Josh is sleeping a few minutes later. I sigh. They grow up so fast, and I'm still hungry. Josh is 12 now, and his fears have left the realm of the supernatural and are firmly grounded in more familiar terrors of everyday life as a boy about to enter his teenage years. Does Becky Harrington know that he thinks about her at night, sometimes before he goes to sleep? When he strips down to shower in the gym, is everyone really staring at his underdeveloped body and laughing behind his back? Derek Richards has beaten him up twice in front of half his class, twice this past month, and he's terrified that the next time, he'll say or do anything to avoid the beating. I start my whispers as he drifts off to sleep. At his age, nightmares don't come easily, but seeds I plant at night blossom during the light of day and manifest themselves as anxiety, shyness, and stress. If I'm diligent and deliberate in my efforts, eventually Josh will start whispering to himself. Those nightmares will be more elaborate than anything I can construct for him. The tactic of focusing on the beatings would be quick and sure to produce enough anxiety to feed me. The easy fear always tastes bland, though, and over the centuries I've developed a more refined palate. The threat of embarrassment for a boy Josh's age is my next best choice. Not quite as tasty as outright terror, but his own mind will supply a steady litany of insecurities and lack of self-confidence. Mix them all together and you get a nice angst casserole. Yum. And certainly nothing I could create on my own. I fill his sleeping head with images of the other boys in his gym class stealing his clothes while he's in the shower. He can't find a towel and must leave the locker room, naked and dripping. He bursts through the door into the hallway outside, and there stands his entire seventh grade class. At the front of the pack, Becky stands arm in arm with Derek Richards. She points at his naked body and starts to laugh. Months pass with this particular nightmare, and then something odd starts to happen. Josh has a growth spurt. His shoulders widen. He starts to fill out. By the summer of his 13th year, there's a healthy layer of muscle over his frame, which is at least 2 inches taller. By his sophomore year in high school, he's the star running back on the Lynchburg Lions football team. As you may have guessed, this is bad for me. It makes my job all the harder. Even when I do manage to slip some insecurity past his self-image, it's short-lived. The summer before his junior year in high school, the real Becky is in his bedroom. She is his girlfriend now. His parents haven't come home from work yet, and Josh is an only child. They have the house to themselves. I feel the bed sag under the weight of two bodies, and the pleasurable feelings and sounds coming from above are making me ill. So it ends again. While Josh and Becky fumble and paw at each other, I slither out from under the bed and seek out my familiar place in the basement to wait. This time, the wait is much longer. Josh's parents live in the house for 10 years after he's gone to college. Finally, a new family moves in, and I take up my post beneath the curvy pink Barbie dream bed they've placed in the bedroom. Heather is 7, and she has 2 older brothers and a dog named Bingo. They've been here for a month, and Heather has brought with her a delightfully long list of things that scare her. Some are typical for a girl her age: fear of the dark, monsters, and noises in the night. The rest of her fears have to do with a recently departed father who became inappropriately friendly with little Heather for the better part of a year. Lately, Heather has taken to creeping into one of her older brother's rooms to curl up in what she believes is a safe place. His behavior is extremely inconvenient for me, and I go hungry more often than not. When Heather sleeps in someone else's bed, she feels protected and rarely has nightmares. I should point out here that I leave the unpleasant business of the father out of her nightmares. I may be a monster of sorts, but that type of fear is tainted, filled with an unhealthy, true evil, rather than the imaginary sort that I prefer. Too much of that is unhealthy, even for a creature like me. Tonight, I decide to torment Heather by briefly scratching my talons on the hardwood floors in quick, repeated bursts, just loud enough that she knows she hears something, fast enough to make her question whether the sounds are real or imaginary. I love that. Uncertainty is almost as good as outright panic. I take my fill, and eventually Heather falls asleep. Tonight I rest well, satisfied with the meal. The next morning, everyone is out of the house. I wait under the bed for Heather to return. Bingo is an especially stupid pug, and despite my attempts to torment him, he just sits there and drools at me, wagging that thing he calls a tail. Bingo begins to bark, and I hear the jingle of keys and running feet. Everyone's home early today. The sound of crying echoes through the house. A wave of fear slams into me, so potent that I almost lose my grip on the box spring. The first rush passes, and I realize what I am feeling is not just coming from Heather. The excess spills over and fills me with energy. Too much. I'm not used to being force-fed like this. Heather runs into the room and scrambles under the covers. She's crying. Proximity of the child and a waking panic nearly overwhelms me, but it's so delicious. I sink my talons into the box spring and hang on for the ride. Heather is sobbing, and a hot rush of pleasure courses through me. I feel a sort of euphoria that I've never experienced before. Drunk on sweet, chaotic panic that is very nearly drowning me, but I can't stop taking it in. Heather's mother walks into her room and sits on the bed. Flo slows down. The presence of her mother comforts Heather. She's less afraid. What's this? The mother's fear is delectable, a refined, mature worry that I've never tasted before. The strength and warmth of it makes me tingle from tip to tail. I don't even have to work for it. It's just there, permeating the room like the oxygen they need to survive. Fear for her children. That's the strongest thing I can taste. Something has threatened all of them. The brothers come home and find Heather and her mother curled up on the bed. They rush over and hug each other, and one of the boys tells her they let them out of school early. They're afraid too, but hide it better than their mother. I am giddy with delight. I can barely think. Raw panic is pouring into me faster than I can absorb it. They're talking in hushed whispers about what happened. As they talk about it, I'm overwhelmed again. They're sharing the anguish and outrage, and it's all flooding right into me. All over a couple of airplanes, something called the Twin Towers. The pressure in my head slows down for a while, from the comforting rush to a dull throb. Uncertainty and panic are leaking into my psyche from outside the house. The entire neighborhood is afraid. The town, the country. The sensation begins to slowly turn from pleasure to pain as it threatens to overwhelm me. I'm satiated, but I cannot cut myself off from the panic. There's too much of it to stop. With an effort, I forcibly cut myself off from it before it destroys me. Darkness knows I've never thought I'd willingly do that. I'd heard stories of what happened when things got bad. Guess I just didn't think it would happen to me. When the mother finally shuts the television off and heads off to bed, I creep out from under Heather's bed to watch her. She's in the throes of a nightmare, of course, but it is not of my doing. I'm too full to partake in the dark beauty, the fear that must be spilling out of her. I slither as best I can, feeling bloated and slow, down the stairs to the basement. This too will pass, and when it does, I will be here, waiting. Twice a year I wake myself up to see if it's safe to come out again. I open myself to the flow and test its strength. Each time I can feel the weave of it weakening somehow, especially from Heather. Mortals say time heals all wounds. I dare not venture out until they've completely scabbed over. Only then can I pick at them and make them bleed again. This doesn't happen for another 4 years. I sense things are back to normal and muster the courage to slither back upstairs to Heather's room. I find it much as it was when I last left it. The bed is a bit different. It's bigger, and the 101 Dalmatian sheets have been exchanged for Hannah Montana ones. I crawl under the bed and cling to the box spring, testing the hand and footholds. Heather, now 11, tosses her book bag on the bed after school and sits on the edge of the mattress. She's different somehow. A cell phone appears in her hands, and a minute later she's talking away to one of her friends. There's a boy she likes. His name is Marcus, and Heather wants her friend to ask him if he likes her. Boys, already? I consider using that later when she goes to sleep. Tentatively, I open myself up to her, gently reaching out to her mind. I frown. I feel nothing. No anxiety, no fear. I'm disappointed, but it's the middle of the day. When it gets dark, we'll play. Finally, she crawls into bed for the night. I try whispering to her, but she's asleep almost at once. In spite of my efforts, she stays that way until morning. Same thing happens the next night. I think sadly of Josh and his passing from adolescence into manhood. Things should have been different with Heather. We should have had at least another 4 or 5 years of time together before she grew deaf to my whisperings. Her soul had grown older and harder faster than Josh's did. Her innocence had somehow withered and died before its time. I never fed off Heather again. The cement floor in the basement behind the boiler has a reddish-brown stain that never came out. Many who look at the house assume it's an oil spill. That was just the spot where Kyle Fowler cracked little Gracie's head just to see what was inside. Nostalgia warms my empty belly as I curl up on the spot. Two more families came and went after Heather's, and I could only feed off the children until they were 6 or 7. The house sits empty now, and has been that way for a very long time. The hope that someday children will remember how to be afraid of a simple nightmare like me strikes me as fantasy. The waking world is more complex and terrifying than anything I could ever conjure up in the dead of the night. It doesn't seem that long ago that children were sheltered from the real terrors until they reached their early teens. Now their parents teach them by example to live with it, adjust, make it part of their daily lives, or worse, forget about it completely. So I wait in the basement for the grindstone of change to do its work and bring a child to me that's truly innocent again. It may take a very long time for things to come around, if they ever do. Until then, I'll wait patiently here in the basement, dreaming up nightmares for little children to fear. And I'll hope that they somehow remember how to be afraid.
Thank you for listening to Under the Bed by Michael Natale, narrated by Michael A. Stackpole. The music for this story was provided by Digital Juice. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Incoming transmission from Deep Space Charter Ad Astral. Patching through.
Welcome aboard Ad Astral, a quarterly transmission podcasting DJ Burnham's short stories. Let us take you on a voyage far into outer and inner space. Together, we'll visit strange and alternative worlds, experience alien cultures, weird experiments, future dystopias, and mysterious life forms. Leap through the looking glass of quantum reality, cheat death, and embrace life to the full. Our growing crew of voice actors and Foley artists are working to make your trip an unforgettable adventure into the unknown. Come and find us at www.adastralpodcast.com. Ad Astral!
End of transmission.
Hi, this is Michael A. Stackpole of the Secrets Podcast and co-host of Dragon Page Cover to Cover. I'm launching a new podcast, Fortress Draconis. It's a chapter-by-chapter audiobook presentation of my novel, Fortress Draconis. If you like exciting epic fantasy with magic, mayhem, politics, and romance all wound together, this is a podcast you will not want to miss. You can subscribe through iTunes or get more information at www.stormwolf.com. Fortress Draconis. The world needs saving, and no one wants our heroes to succeed.